I'll stand over here a little bit. I like being off to the side. I'm not a in front of your face type of person. I guess to probably exemplify that really well is on my way here today. I took somebody's word for it that, and I thought this was a friend of mine. They suggested that I take, I was at Nanticoke earlier today, and they suggested I take the 407 and come across the 407 and take Yonge Street down, and that I'd save a whole bunch of time. So I'll be speaking to that person tomorrow. It was a last minute fun, but anyway, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here today. I am, as it says up there, the operating manager of the Niagara Plant Group. I've put together a bit of a presentation here. We'll talk a little bit about how the Ontario Power Generation hydroelectric business unit works in particular, but I'll be really speaking to what I'm most comfortable with and most knowledgeable about is the Niagara Plant Group. Anytime anybody might have any questions along the way or at the end, you're most welcome to put your hand up and I'll acknowledge and try to do my best to answer any questions you might have. So one of the things that this is just a quick little slide here that exemplifies visually the differences in a lot of the facilities, hydroelectric facilities in Ontario Plant Group, or Ontario Power Generation in particular. If you have a look at some of the stations, in the center is our bread and butter. That's our power plant in Niagara Falls. That's the Saratambeck Power Complex, and it is complex. This is Saratambeck number 2 right here, and this is Saratambeck number 1 right there. I'll be talking more about those in particular. And up there, you can't see it very well, is the pump generating station, and that's what this reservoir is associated with. But I'll speak to those specifically as we go along. Other generators here you see are all over the province, anywhere from Ear Falls, which is close to the Manitoba border, up in the northwest, through to Cornwall, which is the Saunders station right there. That's the middle is basically the dividing point between ourselves and the USA, the New York Power Authority plant. They go any sizes from Evergreen Energy from several hundred kilowatts of output per generator to the largest ones we have in our fleet are at Lower Notch at about 140 megawatts per generator. So there's variables all over the place. Water issues are different. So the message I'm trying to put forth with this particular slide here is there is no cookie cutter approach throughout. And that's one of the challenges that Hans and Renendra face on a regular basis. In our business unit, there's a total of 64 generating stations, which represents approximately 32% of OPG's output. 29 of those 64 are in our Evergreen Energy fleet. And those are include the few wind generators that we have. There's a couple of wind generators in towards Kincardine near the Bruce Nuclear Facility. There's another one that you may have seen driving down the 401 on top of the Pickering Station. And no, it's not a cooling fan. It is, in fact, a wind generator. In our hydroelectric business unit, we also operate and manage 240 dams. 26 river systems. The OPG hydroelectric business unit uses or contains both prescribed and non-prescribed assets. And in more vernacular, the vernacular of the Joe Q public, that's regulated and non-regulated. And currently, we also have new developments on the way. In northwest Ontario, we have near Ear Falls, we have a Laxwell project underway. Northeast Plant Group, there's a lot of development on the Matagami River. And in southern Ontario and Niagara, you may have and you will see something on the Niagara Tunnel Project. This slide's just a brief talk towards the Ontario's market operations. Because of the nature of the business, when Ontario Hydro was first split up, As most of you may be aware, Ontario Hydro was considered the monopoly. It was the monopoly, and there were not a lot of other generators in the province. And the government made an attempt to split up into groups, and they were hoping to create basically a marketplace by trying to come up with more owners of more generators and in fact have a marketplace for electricity. We won't say it was successful, but there are some successes in how we've moved forward as a generating company. Some of the challenges, though, that we have is that while other generators, Bruce Power, for instance, there's a group of hydroelectric generating stations up near Sault Ste. Marie, Great Lakes Power, they are not obliged to generate at all times. They can pick and choose when the prices are high to come on board and generate. Ontario Power Generation, still with an arm of the Ontario government, must offer all generation available, that's any generators that are not on outage, to the market at all times. And how that's offered is in laminations as to cost in order to put that generation online. The IESO is an acronym for the Independent Electricity System Operator. They're basically the caretakers of the grid system in the province of Ontario. They select and dispatch the offered generators based on many factors, including the price constraints that we have. The Caledonia issue that with the First Nations folks is causing some issues with transmission problems that we were hoping to get rectified with Hydro One, but that is being delayed. Outages, other things like that. It's an integrated system. Other challenges that we face, but we also welcome, are our stakeholders. We're all in this together. Stakeholders for the water end of things come from many levels of government. There's the International Joint Commission that is a group that basically looks after the best interests of the Great Lakes, and we're partnered with the U.S. on that. We have representatives in our company that sit on that group. Municipal, federal, provincial, all the different levels of government are involved in different ways. Within OPG, we have a lot of interdependencies with groups and divisions so that we work and, I think, work well together. Other utilities, Hydro One, I mentioned, is from the old Ontario Hydro, is the transmission arm of what you see. So those are the people that typically are the folks that people see out in the trucks more now than ever before, but they look after the transmission lines. Ontario Power Generation looks after the generators. Local communities and interest groups. Interest groups could be kayakers, cottagers. There's people that live on waterways. We've got issues in terms of maximum minimum elevations for boaters. Fish, we have to look after fish spawning, and in local communities, we look to have towards having a positive face in the community, and I think we're doing a good job at that. Our leadership is putting a lot of effort out in that regard now. On the electrical side of things, we've got a number of other different types of stakeholders. There's NERC, which is the North American Electrical Reliability Council, it's a mouthful, and they're basically an arm of FERC, who you may have heard of, and it's an arm that oversees all of the North American electricity system. NERC does. NPCC is the next bite down, if you will. It's the Northeast Power Coordinating Council, and that essentially takes in New York, New England, Pennsylvania, Ontario, Quebec, our provinces, our maritime provinces, and they look at reliability and stability in those particular areas. I mentioned the Independent Electrical System Operator already. They're the province of Ontario's caretaker of that particular aspect. Hydro One, once again, other generators, and local utilities. Typically, your bill comes from probably a consortium of utilities. If you live in the city of Toronto, you're well aware that Toronto Hydro is a huge utility, and they do good work too. So now we get to the Niagara Plant Group. In the Niagara Plant Group, we have 5 generating stations. Those 5 generating stations include 38 generators. I won't try to explain what a frequency changer is, but we have one. 2 of the generators that we have at Surratt and Beck number 1 are actually 25 hertz. And for anybody that's got any type of electrical background, probably wondering where in the world do we have any 25 hertz load? And the world, according to Hamilton and Stelco, is where in the world? Total installed capacity in the Niagara Plant Group is approximately 2,300 megawatts. We've got 231 staff, give or take. Annual production, approximately 12 terawatt hours. And availability factor, we are a very, very reliable plant group within the hydroelectric fleet. Hydroelectric in general is a reliable source of electricity. Ours in particular, Beck 2 I'll talk to once again after a bit. Beck 2 is extremely reliable, and it's the biggest of the generating stations in the province. So fuel sources, excuse me. Obviously, the Great Lakes is our fuel source. You'll see the ups and downs of Lake Superior, Lake Huron, Lake Erie, Lake Ontario, Lake Michigan. Primarily, although all of the fuel begins up in the north and most of our replenishment comes from the north, but some of it does come from precipitation, etc. Our volatility is really associated with Lake Erie. Lake Erie is a very shallow lake, and as elevations on Lake Erie change, so does our fuel source. So when Lake Erie's up, we're going to have more generation, we'll be able to forecast better our opportunities to generate. And we do forecast on increments going from month out to 10 years out. Another part of the fuel source that I guess if we look at is just to go back here, is the Agoki Long Lac that you saw in the next slide. And that goes into Lake Superior. The natural flow from the Agoki and Long Lac rivers was northwards in its natural days back in previous to 1939. It was rerouted to flow south into the Great Lakes Basin. In 1939 was when the Agoki was first and the Long Lac was second. The redirected water, which is approximated at 5,000 cubic feet per second, was credited to Canada for energy production. And the reason, if you can guess, 1939 and 1943, what major events were happening in the world, and then that we may have needed extra electricity production, and it's World War II. So here we are with opportunity to generate. We're going to have more electricity production, especially for steel production, and they've come up with a way that basically allowed us to keep water in the Great Lakes Basin, and we didn't lose anything because of it. And it was an agreement of notes, an exchange of notes between the U.S. and Canada government and Canadian government at the time. So, water entitlement for power production in Niagara. So now the water can't come through the Great Lakes, and it's coming into Lake Erie. Well, out of Lake Erie, well, there's two sources of conveyance that basically bring our water, our fuel, to our generating stations. The Welland Ship Canal supplies not only water for shipping to allow ships to go from Lake Erie and Lake Ontario, but also most of the water actually is arguably that 5,000 CFS from the Agoki Long Lac. In the area of 85% of the water that goes into or that flows into the Wellanship Canal is for power production. Very little of the water that's actually in the Wellanship Canal is required for navigation of the ships. And of course, the big one is the Niagara River itself. When we're looking at the calculations to determine what water is left for electricity production, and I am correct in saying that, is the first things that must come into play are domestic use and irrigation. Second thing that is in there, it's first and foremost above electricity, is electricity production, is the minimum falls flow. From April 1st to October the 31st, during the daylight tourism hours, there is a minimum falls flow of 100,000 cubic feet per second going over the two falls. During all other times of year and during the evening hours of that particular time period that I mentioned, that's considered non-tourist, and we only are obligated to put half of that water over the falls. So once we've determined through a series of calculations, and they are calculations based on elevations at critical points along the river and in Lake Erie and some weather forecasting, we can make a determination of how much water is coming down the river. We can take away from that what we need to use for domestic and irrigation, then the falls flow, and whatever's left over is divided into two. Half goes to the American New York Power Authority, and the other half goes to the Canadian Ontario Power Generation. So going back to the Wellanship Canal, it's operated by the St. Lawrence Seaway Management Corporation. As I mentioned, I guess I was getting ahead of myself a little bit, most of the flow in the ship canal is destined for energy production. However, shipping traffic is a priority, and there are challenges on a routine basis. The way the folks at the Seaway operate the water is more of an art than a science, in that they know that if they've got a larger ship coming through, maybe an ocean-going ship coming through the locks, they will actually call and say, I'd like you to reduce, and they're talking to the operators in the control center in Niagara, I'd like you to reduce 1,000 or 2,000 cubic feet per second. And it's a little bit of a tennis match back and forth, so we're trying to negotiate. We still want to make electricity. They want to make sure the ship gets through, so they'll buffer back and forth. So depending on who's on shift at the Seaway at any particular time, like I say, it's an art. It's a lick the thumb and see how it looks. Inflows to the Wellanship Canal are based on some control gates in Port Colborne. I don't know if everybody or anybody's had a chance to take the drive down the ship canal, but it's a lovely trip, and there is a museum in and around St. Catharines, and it's something that if you're in and around Niagara, that's one of the things you may want to put on your to-do list. Yeah, although you can't see it in this picture, the Wellanship Canal is running right along here. This is the number two intake gate structure. We have two intake structures that come off of the Wellanship Canal. This is the majority, and as you can see, there's a lot of angry water that's passing through there. In fact, our hydroelectric development folks now are actually looking at this site for the potential to use that to get some electricity out of this site too. So the potential to not only use it as a control structure to get the water from the Wellanship Canal, but also to potentially make a couple of extra megawatts of electricity. If you know Niagara area, this is just on the north side of the Allenburg Bridge and Highway 20. And you may remember the Allenburg Bridge was in the news a few years ago when the operator at the Seaway, let's just say he didn't get the bridge up quick enough for one of the ships to go through. And one of the ships collided with the Allenburg Bridge. So that was quite an episode. So what I did just show you, that's up here in the back. That water that comes from those intake structures comes into two man-made lakes, reservoirs, called Lake Moody and Lake Gibson. They're in Thorold, and we've got people living all around there. We got people that go fishing in there. It's once again, one of the challenges that we have in Niagara that a lot of other places do not have is the urban setting. We have people that not only come to Niagara to see the falls, but they want to see some of the industrial sites. We've got the Niagara Parks Commission runs tours through our facility now too. But we do have people that live all around here. Now those are challenges. We have to operate the elevations in here in these storage lakes within given parameters, so that we don't flood anybody out. At the same time, we don't want to get it too low and hurt the fish. This station here is DQ number 2, NF23, and this station here is DQ ND1. The NF23 and ND1 are old designations used in electrical operating from the Ontario Hydro days. This station here, this ND1 station, there's four generators in it. They're about 5.5 megawatts each, and this station was built in 1898, so it owes us nothing. It's been around for a long time. Some of the challenges we face with that net with this station now is it's less efficient. These are horizontal generators. I'll show you a cross section of some vertical generators later. These ones are vertical. These generators are more efficient than these. Not a lot more, but more. And that's once again some of the modeling challenges that Hans and Renendra take into play when they're putting things together. So that our goal is to try and get the last watt out of the last drop of water. Conveyance to the Surat and Beck facility. Surat and Beck facility, for those of you who don't know it, it's right beside the Floral Clock, if you've been there, or right beside the Queenston-Lewiston Bridge at the end of Highway 405. The conveyance to it is supplied by two underground tunnels. We currently have two underground tunnels that go under the City of Niagara Falls right now, and we've got an open-cut canal that also goes through the City of Niagara Falls. In the neighborhood of 10 kilometers long, the intakes I'll show you where the intakes are in a moment, but the current capacity of this conveyance that we have right now doesn't allow us to take our share of Niagara water when the flows are high and during non-tourist falls requirements. So as I had mentioned earlier, when we're looking at having the greater amount of water available for electricity generation, there are times when we can't take what's allocated to us simply because we're choked. We've got the generators available at the remote end of the generating stations, but we can't get the water there. So we do have some facility right now where we do have an agreement with the New York Power Authority that they will rent water from us, and it's just there's a couple of agreements that are in place. But it allows us not to spill that water if at all possible. It's wasted fuel if it does. In order to mitigate some of those concerns, and it's taken a while, but the new tunnel construction is now underway. And we'll talk a little bit to that. The Niagara Conveyance. So here we are, coming in from Lake Erie. If you start at the bottom, this I stole from the INC site. This is an ice boom that goes in every year, and the intent of it is to reduce the amount of lake ice that gets into the river and block up the intakes to the generating facilities. But the water, once it gets down to the falls area, here it is. I'm losing it there. If we look up here, I've got one there. Thank you, sir. Yeah, that's better. Coming around Grand Island and Navy Island, comes back into the Grass Island Pool, and that's where we basically manage elevations to try and keep water elevations in these areas for all the shoreline people within 1.5 feet on a daily basis from here. So we don't want to flood people out, obviously. The New York Power Authority intakes are right up in this area, and they have tunnels, and they've got a canal. And the Beck intakes are right in here, and that's just around the village of Chippewa, which is, used to be called the village of Chippewa. It's part of Niagara Falls. And this is right here. This is the Welland River. And off of the Welland River is the open cut canal, and the open cut canal comes here. These tunnel intakes go under and they surface here. So the open cut canal and the tunnel, they both surface in the same area, and they come in here to the generating stations. And this is the pump generating station reservoir that I mentioned earlier too. You may have seen this if you've been in Niagara Falls. Right now there's a bunch of construction going on associated with the tunnel project right in this area. But these are the gates that, I won't say control, but these are the gates for the number one and the number two intakes, tunnels that currently are in place, and they go down from there. So they're coming off the side. The new tunnel is going to be more in the middle of the water. It's going to come right in the Grass Island Pool right in here. These are not control gates. These take preparation. These are only if in the event that we had to make a planned effort to go inside the tunnels, and that hasn't happened in the 50 some odd years that we've had it in place. We do operate them routinely just to make sure that they are operable, but if you go to Niagara Falls during the Winter Festival of Lights, typically they've got these things dressed up as big bells, and then the little there's the Beck Complex, Radham Beck Complex. Once again, there's Beck 2, it's 16 generators. Beck 1, there's 10 generators. This is the four bays, the four bay for Beck 1, the four bay for Beck 2. There's a connecting canal right here. The water comes up, and it's just up here a little bit where the tunnels had surfaced. The pump generating station is right there, and this is a 750-acre reservoir. Right in there. And we'll get to the specifics of what each one does there now. Beck 1 was built in the late teens, 1918, I believe, is when it was started. When it was built, it was the largest generating station in the world. It's been in service approximately 90 years. And today, it's the third largest generating station in the fleet still. We've got 10 generators and two of our 25 hertz, which I had mentioned earlier. And they're in service. We've got two customers in the province of Ontario now. There's a small load in the city of Niagara Falls, and there is in Hamilton. There's a larger load, and because of the volatility of the Stelco load in Hamilton, we need a lot of capacity available in order to make that work. Having said that, it's another optimization issue, in that the generators that service those 25 cycle customers are less efficient, so it's another challenge for the folks that are working on the models. And I'm glad it's them that are working on the models. The frequency changer, and just to tell you what that is it's essentially it's two generators connected together by a common mechanical shaft. And essentially what happens is that if you've got an abundance of 25 cycle generation, what you can do, or what does happen, it does not that you can do, but what does happen is that if the load's not there, the 25 cycle generation in this case becomes the mechanical force. It becomes the dropping water. It becomes the coal. It becomes the nuclear fuel. It's the source that drives the other generator. So the 25 cycle becomes the driver for the 60, and vice versa. It can work both ways. And it is a stabilizing influence electrically on the 25 cycle system, which is very tiny, and it needs it because of the volatile load. Here's a cross-section of a generating station, and this is the forebay. Now, I don't know if Hans or Renendra will mention it in their presentation, but the operating head is one of the components of determining of how much electricity you can get out of basically your between the water and your operating head, which is the fall between the forebay and the tail race, gives you how much potential energy is available in order to generate with. In the Thread and Beck facilities, it's about 290 feet, the drop. And that's why the generators, actually why the generating stations are located where they are rather than right at the falls. The falls themselves are about 110, 120 feet drop, but by taking that extra trip down, going from the falls themselves down to Queenston, we've picked up another 180 feet of operating head. This gives us that much more power. So from the forebay, we have control gates here. These are the emergency gates that actually protect the penstock and the generators. The powerhouse itself is actually down at the bottom, right near the river level. So the water comes in down the penstock, which is this long pipe here, and it brings it to the turbine or the runner. And without getting into any electrical theory discussions, that's the driving force that keeps the that makes the generator move. Beck 1, this is Beck, and we're still talking Beck 1 here. It's a very unique station in the province of Ontario, too, that typically we spoke of Hydro 1 and OPG as being two separate entities. And here we have to still live as one happy family because our switchyard, our generating station, are all in the same building. So we have to interact a lot, and it presents some challenges, especially along the lines of safe working conditions. These don't exist anymore, but up until, I would say as 6 years ago, all of the generators at Beck 1 had this rather than a head gate up at the top. And this is called a Johnson valve. And it was a really, really intelligent way in its time of stopping the water flow. It was a mechanical wonder. They actually, by a series of valve operations, they would get this piston-like device, and it would take the penstock pressure, the water pressure that was in the penstock, and either close this or open this to allow water to get through to the runner. But after the water goes through the runner, you see it comes through on this side and the larger side, gets smaller, and then after it goes through the wicket gates and the blades of the turbine, it goes out to the drafty window, river. Sorry. That was Beck 1. Beck 2, it's the largest hydroelectric generating station in Ontario. Around 1,450 megawatts capacity installed. It's about 50 years old, and we've recently completed a 9-year station upgrade, and it gave us about an extra 194 megawatts. Typically, on a hydroelectric generator, you're looking at about 40 years between major rehabs. So that's what we got to with that. We're looking at Beck 1. We're in the process now of putting business cases together to try and get some of the old generators there built up and more efficient, new runners, new electrical components. Excuse me. This is the Beck 2 plant. It gives you basically an idea of this is the what they call the operating floor, and there's still about 70 feet below that of 70 or 80 feet below that of generator. These are the exciters. There's 16 of them once again. It's about a quarter of a mile long, the plant. Small in terms of nuclear and fossil stations, but in the hydroelectric site, it's a large plant. The pump generating station I mentioned is the it's sort of like a turbocharger, some people like to call it, in that it allows us to, in a perfect world, and we're not there yet, it allows us to take the water that we do not need because of the reduced load during the non-peak times. So during the wee hours of the night, during the long weekends, during a Saturday or Sunday, during the time of year when the temperature isn't too hot, we don't need air conditioners, we don't need heaters. It allows us to take the water that we don't need for electricity, pump it up into that 750-acre reservoir I had mentioned, and store it, and then when the time comes that we need the electricity during the daytime, and we'll take that water back out, we'll generate it at the PGFs, get some of our megawatts back that it took to pump it up there, not all of it, it's about I think we're running about 1.4, 1.5 now, Renendra? 1.4, 1.5 to 1 factor. So we get it up, put it down, and then we get to generate that same water again downstream at the BEC 1 and BEC 2 sites too. So it gives us that extra bit of fuel that to try and complement different challenges that we have. Challenges that we do have in the market today is that the PGS, when it's pumping, is looked at as a load. It's looked at as any other industry might be looked at. So it's like starting up a mill or starting up any assembly line, and it gets all the charges associated with that. And as a company, we're working at with the independent electricity system operator to see if we can't maybe get a few rules changed in there. And if so, it's our belief that it's going to be for the benefit of the people of Ontario. Gives you a little bit of an idea. This is all this actually at one time was all I guess it was an apple orchard, and on a fairly regular basis, probably every 3 to 4 years, we get this reservoir drained down to a bare minimum, and you can still see the roadways and some remnants of foundations and such that are in this facility. Operating range in terms of elevation goes from 600 feet above sea level to 627 maximum. The total volume in there is, I believe it's around 4 billion gallons. And I can't recall how many megawatt hours that comes out of the station, but there's a lot of water in there anyways. Going back upstream now, go back to the International Control Dam. This is upstream of the falls. Niagara Falls themselves are down here. The old barge is right around here. And I'm going to be drawing pictures for you. American and Canadian side is over here. But now we have the International Control Dam. It goes approximately halfway across the Niagara River, just upstream of the falls. In it, there are 18 control gates, and what these control gates are intended to do is to allow the operators at this site to manipulate how much water is not only going around the end of it, they know how much water is going around the end of it based on elevations and how much space there is at the end, but also to add or take away water going through these tainter gates such that they can ensure they've got the minimum falls flow going at any given time. Allows them to manage this grass island pool elevation and all of the intake structures for both the American and the Canadian facilities are upstream of there. So by virtue of that grass island pool elevation, it also provides us with opportunities to take the water or the fuel that we're allocated. There's another view, a helicopter or a bird's eye view of this same facility. Once again, here's just the rapids of the just before we're getting to the falls. As you can see here, we've got a few of these gates that are passing some water right now, or that's when the shot was taken. This has just recently been moved to accommodate the tunnel project. It was actually moved over one bay, and it now comes over into here. And if you'll recall, the new tunnel is going to take its water from right around in that area there. These are where the current tunnels are right now, and this is the Welland River up here. So the new tunnel tunnel boring machine eventually is supposed to be surfacing right up in there. It started at the other end. And the purpose of this is it's an accelerating wall, and it helps basically do, for the folks, there's a control structure there, manned 24/7, and they're managing these the flows here just to make sure that both utilities, they are although OPG paychecked, they are the actual funds for their labor comes from both NYPA and OPG. So they're supposed to be neutral. There's a tunnel boring machine that you may have heard of being called Big Becky. It was a school group that won a competition, and obviously with Surratt and Beck being the facility, and typically these machines get a lady's name, so Big Becky became the name of the tunnel boring machine. It is 130 meters long. It's very huge. It's the tunnel, when it's done, is going to be 14.4 meters in diameter. They've had some challenges early, but they expected challenges early. You can see represented, there's some people that are actually working on the cutter heads right there. So there's a small control room just in the back, and what they do in this control room is they've got a guidance system that helps them to basically focus on where they're going, and they as you can imagine with something that big, the corrections, if they go offline, it would be huge. So they have to manage this very carefully. And routinely they have to stop and change the cutter heads on here. On average, about 15 meters per day is the expected progress. And so far we're looking still optimistically as October 2009 when the new tunnel is in service. And at that point in time, that problem we had with conveyance and not getting the Canadian water will be dealt with. We won't have that problem anymore. In fact, some of our challenges may be in helping out our American friends, like they've been helping us out over the years. And that's pretty much the end of what I have to say. I just put that in there because it's a nice place to come and visit. So if anybody has any questions,